and ship you ever attempt to build. If you will write down this single sentence and allow its truth to kind of seep down into the corners and crevices of your mind and begin to envelop the truth that it entails, you will begin to see a revolution in your relationships, whether it's friends, whether it's a love relationship, family, or what have you. And then I finally give them the sentence. I usually have to repeat the sentence about 16 times. Let me give it to you a couple times here. Here it is. If you try to build intimacy with another person, before you have done the hard work of getting whole on your own, all your relationships become an attempt to complete yourself. Let me say that again. If you try to build intimacy with another person, before you have done the hard work of getting whole on your own, all your relationships become an attempt to complete yourself, and they will fall dismally flat. I guarantee you, they will. They'll fall dismally flat. Why? Because nobody walking around the face of this planet, let alone this campus, was designed to meet all your needs all the time and somehow mystically complete you. It just doesn't work. You remember that movie that was so popular a couple years ago, Jerry Maguire? Do you guys go to movies? We're Nazarene. We don't go to movies. We just rent them on video. But we're very holy. This movie, Jerry Maguire, how many of you saw that film? Okay. Remember the line everybody was quoting, "Show me." Right. Every romantic that saw this movie remembers another line. Do you remember what it was?
Listen to the chorus of female voice.
It was mostly women that said that, I know. When Tom Cruise said that. Can any guy, you remember Tom Cruise said that? Can any guy say that like Tom Cruise said that? You remember how he said that? He's so dramatic. We did. Can I get a guy that would just stand up and just say that? Come on, I got to get a guy that will say that. Right here, can you do it? All right. What's your name?
Trevor.
Trevor, just turn around. Say that like you did.
Say
Yeah.
You complete me.
Close. Kind of like Tom Cruise, yeah. Pretty good.
Good try.
You remember the scene, right? Tom Cruise and this woman, they've fallen in love and they've gotten married and they're having a really difficult time in their first year. And we can identify with that.
Sure.
We really had a tough time our first year. In fact, the very first sentence of Saving Your Marriage Before
right.
It Starts, how's that go?
And it's true, we dated for 7 years, all the way through college, we got married, and we say the first sentence of one of our books, Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, is we never had any premarital counseling, but we spent our whole first year of marriage in therapy, and that's how it was for us, even after 7 years of dating. So.
And we both grew up in parsonages,
yes, we
both
did.
Of our parents.
Passionately, you know, committed to our faith, believed in God's presence in our relationship. It was still hard work.
Absolutely. I think people, we didn't have any premarriage counseling. People thought, oh, they have the same name. They'll get
right.
along fine, so they don't need any help. So, and by the way, if you are confused, we do have the same name. I'm Leslie, and she's Leslie. We spell it the exact same way. It's very confusing, but that's the way God planned it for us, okay? So just so you know. If you want to even know how more complicated our life is, I'm the third, which means my father's name is Leslie, and my grandfather's name is Leslie, okay? We took a taxi cab yesterday, and our cab driver's name was Leslie. We have lots of Leslies in our home. And so when it came time to name our baby, we named him?
John.
John, yeah. John Leslie. So Tom Cruise has fallen in love, they've gotten married, and here they are in the first year of their marriage, and they're really struggling with it, and they're really having a tough time in this first year of this marriage, and he's off on some business trip and having some success, realizes it's not nearly as fulfilling without her in his life, and so he comes home, cuts his trip short, comes in to find this his wife in the midst of this support group with other women, and here they are, they're all talking and kind of commiserating about men and how difficult men can be and so forth, and he comes in the midst of this, puts his baggage down, and launches into this speech that's just unbelievable. He gets to the climax of that speech, and he says, as only Travis, I mean, he, say it one more time, he gets to the climax of this speech, and he says, stand up one more time, and he says,
you complete me,
right? You, he says it more like this, really. You complete me. Right? And every romantic that's watching that movie goes, oh, that is so sweet, right? I want somebody to say that to me. Oh, I'd like to say that to somebody else, right? Well, I got to tell you, if you believe, I'm no psychologist, but, well, I am. But if you believe that, if you really believe that somebody can complete you, you're setting yourself up for serious heartache.
Right.
Because nobody was ever designed to do that. I'll never forget when we first realized this. It was an amazing thing. In fact, you know what happens when you have two people that believe this, that you can kind of find this completion with one another? You create an interesting kind of relationship. I'm looking for a guy and a girl seated next to each other, and I can't even find one down here close. Right here. Yeah,
there
you two.
Go.
You guys just come up here just for a second. And even if you're not dating, will you just come here for a second? You don't want to? All right, I got to find another one. How about you two, right here? Will you guys come on up? Come on up. He won't even give me eye contact. Come on up, just for a second. I'll take you 1 second. I won't embarrass you for more than just 1 second. What are your names? Kristen? And come on, right here. Just, I'm going to have you stand right here. Right, you don't even have to come up on the stage, right here. Now, you guys aren't dating?
No.
Friends?
Friends.
Okay. So that's all right. We understand that. So you just stand about a foot apart. What's your name?
Matt.
You're going to hit me after this, aren't you? Okay. Now, just we know you're not dating, but just lean stay a foot apart, and just lean your shoulders in on each other, and then just gently put your heads together for a second. You get the idea, right? Now, when we keep leaning on each other. Now, when we see a couple walking around like this, what do we say? Aww. Right? You're making us sick. Sit down, okay? I can take you to college campuses, and we've been to a lot
yes,
of them all over the country, and we could show you dozens of couples that walk around like that, leaning in on each other. You hardly see, at least figuratively, you hardly see one without the other, you know? They sign up for all the same classes together, whether they need them or not. They go to the dining hall together. They think they study in the library together. You hardly see one without the other. It's almost like they have fused their identities. And we call that an A-frame relationship. An A-frame relationship where you just lean in. Now, what happens when you're leaning in on somebody else because they're going to meet all my needs and vice versa, and we lean in on each other? What happens in an A-frame relationship when one person stumbles? Yeah, the whole relationship gives way, right? Because there's no sense of individual identity in the relationship, okay? They're counting on this other person, so they're leaning in on this other person. One of them stumbles, boom, the whole thing gives way. And I'll never forget when we learned this in our own marriage, it took such pressure off of the relationship.
Yeah, it really did.
In fact, a Sunday school teacher gave us a terrific book by Larry Crabb, and I'll never forget later on we met Larry in Singapore, of all places. We were doing a marriage seminar there, and Larry Crabb was there with us. We went out to dinner, and I told him, I said, you saved our marriage. He said, what are you talking about? I said, we read your book about marriage. Oh, yeah. And the fundamental message of this book is nobody walking around the face of this earth can ever complete you, because ultimately you find your compulsion for completion where? In a relationship with your Heavenly Father.
Right.
Now, I know you've heard that before, but it is so true, and I've heard it all my life. Grew up in a parsonage, like I said, heard all my life. But when I got married, I was still leaning in on Leslie, saying, why don't you meet my needs? You're my soulmate. You're supposed to do that. Oh, that put a lot of pressure on each other. Let's see if we can make this as practical.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons we know that our wholeness, that we find our wholeness in Christ, we know that. But one of the reasons we're really tempted to lean on another person to be complete is because basically we're kind of lazy. We just want a little bit of a shortcut to our own personal wholeness. And you kind of look around, and usually in a relationship we're attracted to people who have strengths and skills and abilities that we don't have well developed. And we think, man, they've got that quality, and I like that. I'm just going to lean on them, and they can kind of be that for me. You know, they'll do that for me. And what happens is we want to kind of shortcut and circumvent our journey to wholeness, but we just can't do it. And sometimes it is really tough work as we really work in our character building workshop with God on our personal wholeness. And I think it's because we are really pretty complex people. You know, in fact, one of the things that is true about us that we learn in relationships is that there really are parts of ourselves that we are just totally blind to. Have you ever discovered this in a relationship with someone else? There are parts of you that other people know well about you, but you're clueless about. Do you know what I mean? In fact, let me just ask you, how many of you like to see yourself on video? You like to watch yourself on video? Okay, well, we have someone who really does. That's not my experience. Most people, I think, you know, kind of sit in a corner and think, that's what I look like? I did that, you know? In fact, I remember one of the most painful parts of me in my graduate experience was I'd have to learn to become a therapist, and then they'd videotape all your sessions. And you have to sit down with professors and other students in your class later on and watch how you did as a counselor. And everyone analyzes you. They say, well, you know, you thought you were doing this wonderful empathic listening. And they'd say you were looking at your watch and clearing your throat, you know. And you think, there it is. It's right on tape. I do that. In fact, I don't know if you guys are like this, but I don't even like to hear my own voice on an answering machine. Do you guys feel that way? I mean, every time it comes on, I think, I sound like that? That's not my voice. You know, that's goofy. You know, that doesn't sound like me. But it's like that. There are parts of ourselves that other people know well, but we're blind to. And I'll tell you why. It gets more complex than this. It's not just the images, the video images and the voice images. It's really our interior character. People know things about you that you just haven't had the courage to face about yourself. And, you know, and sometimes there's a process that we go through. Do you know when we have a feeling that's pretty difficult for us to own up to? Maybe we're really angry with our roommate, and we don't want to admit that we're angry because we don't like to think of ourselves as an angry person. So we might say something in the middle of a fight like, I'm not angry, you're the one that's angry. You know, have you had someone say that to you before? And they're pointing their finger at you and their voice is raised and it's clear you're not angry, but they're having the angry feeling and they're projecting it onto you. And we do that sometimes. It's almost like in our mind, when we have an emotion that we haven't come to terms with ourselves, we just turn on our slide projector, pop that slide in, and project it right onto the face of another person that we're talking to, and let them have that emotion so that we don't have to take care of it, you know? There are parts of ourselves that we are blind to. The parts of ourselves that other people know well that we don't yet know well. Now, let me suggest, in our journey to wholeness, the finest person to reveal these to you is Christ. As you work out your wholeness, you'll come to be in a loving relationship. You'll have those things revealed to you, but it's great if you can also have all the people you're in relationship with now, your friends, your family, ask them honest questions. Ask them, what kind of a friend am I? What could I do to be a better friend? And just listen to what they say. Invite feedback, because that will close that window in the blind part of yourself and expand the part of yourself that you know and can work on and can become whole in that area of your personal. And let me suggest, there are other parts of ourselves on this journey to wholeness that confuse us, not because other people know them well, but we're blind to them, but they're hidden parts of ourselves. These are the parts of ourselves that we know all too well. You know, the character deficits that we don't want to remember, the parts of ourselves that we don't feel good about. We don't want anyone else to know these parts. We're unwilling to reveal them to other people because we're afraid of the rejection. We're ashamed of those parts of ourselves. And so they take on a power in our lives. They become a hidden part of ourselves that we hold inside, and we don't let ourselves be genuinely known in relationships. Now, I got to tell you, we do this in so many ways, but anytime you keep a secret part of yourself, it takes on a power that drains some life and energy away from yourself as a whole person. And again, we can deal with these in our relationship with God. But I got to tell you, I remember how bad it feels to hold on to a secret from the first time I ever kept a huge secret about something I was ashamed of. And it happened to me in the third grade. And I'll tell you what happened. for whatever reason, I had this totally favorite record album I loved. Now, you guys probably don't even know what a record is, but I loved it. And it was this record album called Dr. Funhouse, and my song on it was called Can I Borrow Your Burrow? If I can, that would be swell. I have no idea why I loved it, but I loved this song. Now, one morning, I was so excited about this song, I sat down and listened to the record over and over and over again. I didn't realize, you know, lyrics are printed on the, you know, on jackets of albums. So what I did was I thought I'd have to write them out because I wanted to take it to school and tell everyone. It was show and tell day. So I sat down and I listened to it about a million times, wrote down all the words, and went in, and it was show and tell. I was all excited. Mrs. Williams, third grade class. And I read my song, the lyrics to my song. Well, I got to tell you guys, it turned out just like my fantasy. Everyone busted up laughing. They thought it was hilarious. They thought it was one of the funniest little poems they'd ever heard. And my teacher was so impressed. Afterwards, she asked me for it. And she said to me at the end, you know, everyone clapped and laughed. And I sat down. And afterwards, she said, I can't believe you wrote that poem. Didn't say a word. Wasn't my poem, but it was a glorious moment, and I wasn't going to let it pass, you know? And so I just said, yeah, you know, wasn't that great? And she said, can I have a copy of that? And so I gave it to her. Felt a little twinge in my conscience, didn't say anything about it, felt guilty, but I just kind of let it go and hoped it would disappear. Have you ever done that before? 3 weeks later, I'm in class. All of a sudden, in walks the principal. Mrs. Williams says, class, everybody quiet down. We've got a really special surprise today. The principal comes in, pulls out from behind his back a giant three and a half foot trophy. This woman with giant wings on it, and calls me up to the front of the class. Now, she has secretly entered my poem that I didn't write in a poetry contest in which it won grand prize. Now, it's going to be published in a book of children's poetry, and I didn't write it, okay? So, I take this trophy from the principal. I go sit down at my desk with my head down. Finally, I can't take the guilt. I ran out of the room. I'm crying. You know, I'm hiding in the little girl's restroom. And my teacher comes in trying to figure out what's wrong. And I tell her and have this horrible moment of confession. And you know, I have to go home with this trophy now. And I don't want to have to tell my mom. Mrs. Williams, I think, was so embarrassed. She didn't want to have to tell anyone. I figured that out as an adult because she said, now I want you to keep this trophy as a reminder to always tell the truth. Well, now I'm thinking she probably just was too embarrassed to tell anyone else what happened. So I had to take the trophy home. Now, every day, now I put it in my closet. I was afraid to tell my parents. They would have been so disappointed in me. So I'd stick it in my closet. And every day my mom would come in and kind of touch up my room, and she pulled the trophy out and put it on my dresser. She was really proud of me that I won this big award. It took me a month to have the courage to tell her, you know, that I didn't write it, I lied, and the whole thing. I cannot tell you the agony of those days. Have you ever carried a secret like that where you just felt like you were going to die, the agony of holding on to that? Well, it's a very trivial example of what we do with some really important parts of ourselves. And we do it now, don't we? We do it in our daily lives. And our journey to wholeness gets stuck. And our relationships with other people become less authentic and real because we don't take that part of ourselves and open it up, first to God as we're working on wholeness, and secondly to people who we trust. Now, I'm not saying you just divulge every secret and tell everybody and confess things. I'm saying you find a person you respect and trust and is responsible, and you have accountability and confession, and that is a huge part of what it means to not take a shortcut around personal wholeness and try to find our completion in another person, but to do the hard work of getting whole on our own and take off the masks that we wear, and the masks we wear to ourselves and the masks we wear to others, and become whole. And when you're in a relationship with someone like that, there's a quality of aliveness, isn't there? You love to be around people that are so genuine and are so well understanding of themselves because it makes for an incredibly healthy connection. We know when we're doing that with another person.
So we want to challenge you here today to think of somebody in your life that you can turn to.
Right.
They may be a peer or they may be somebody older and wiser, but turn to somebody in your life that can serve as a reflection, as a mirror back to you, to say, here's what you need to work on, right? Here's some blind spots. Perhaps you might want to consider this, you know. Because the point is, the answer to the question, how do you build healthy relationships, has to do with finding ultimately your compulsion for completion in a relationship with your Heavenly Father, and then being an honest, genuine, authentic human being. And when you begin to cultivate this quality in your life, it's amazing how you begin to pull people like-minded toward you. It's amazing how relationships work that way. It truly is. In fact, we're going to follow up on this a little bit later with some remarks tonight in relationship to love. But let me just say it one more time. If you try to build intimacy with another person before you have done the hard work of getting whole on your own, all your relationships become an attempt to complete yourself, and they'll fall dismally flat, guaranteed. If you happen to have the time to come back in here tonight, we're going to give you the most practical, livable definition of love that we know of. We're going to give you the three essential ingredients of romantic love. We're going to focus a little bit more on romance tonight. This is not for couples, by the way, tonight. Has to do with single people understanding accurately. Again, kind of straightening out some crooked thinking on love. I think if we have time tonight, we're also going to look at four different relationship styles and how they tend to interact with each other. And I'm just kind of curious, how many of you will I see back here tonight? Can I see your hands? All right, that's great. I hope that you'll come back. I promise not to embarrass anybody else. And somebody protect me from this guy on the way out tonight, if you would. And Todd, I want to have you come up and just close with us in a word of prayer, if you would. Thanks, folks. We'll see you tonight.